Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. When it's time for a new credit card, the best ones do way more than just buy stuff. And that's why U.S. Bank offers credit cards that make every day more rewarding. Earn cash back, score points when you shop, dine out, travel, or binge watch, or get a low intro APR. U.S. Bank credit cards were designed to fit your lifestyle. So make every day more rewarding and check out usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
In the hands of Waiters, 3 seconds left for three in the win. Yes! Deion has done it!
I watched Marcus Morris handling the ball like he was a point guard. I watched him give the ball to Julius Randle. This brother was dribbling the ball up the damn court.
First team all defense.
I don't know about this, but Rihanna just walked in front of me. Are you kidding me?
Welcome to a Thursday afternoon edition of the RotoWire NBA podcast. Nick Whalen joined by RotoWire's assistant NBA editor, Alex Barutha. Alex, we were supposed to have Ben Zweiman of DraftKings Nation coming on to talk some betting, some NBA gambling today. Unfortunately, he's under the weather, so we'll push that back. Hopefully, we'll have Ben on next week. If not, we'll do that sometime in mid-February, but we'll definitely get Ben on the show in these next few weeks. Nonetheless, Alex, plenty to talk about. You and I just spoke earlier this week about kind of a grab bag of topics around the NBA, and I want to do the same thing today. Like, there's not really a dominant story, I don't think, in the league right now. Thankfully, the COVID stuff has calmed down to some degree. I think the league on Monday or Tuesday released that there's only been one additional positive test over the last week, which is down from like a million the last couple of weeks. So hopefully we're kind of already being rescheduled for some off dates in the coming months. But I want to talk about the Utah Jazz, who have very quietly ascended to the top of the Western Conference. The Lakers, of course, took a loss in Philadelphia last night. They're in action tonight against Detroit. But I wouldn't say anybody wrote off Utah after last season, but it was kind of the same old thing that we've seen from the Jazz, even in the pre-Donovan Mitchell days, where you know they're always right there in that kind of 4-6 range in the Western Conference, and then playoff time comes and they wilt in round one or round two. Last year it was round one against Denver, but especially after watching this team this year, we know how that game seven ended in the bubble against Denver. All of a sudden, it's like it's not that crazy to think that could have been the team that went to the Western Finals. You know, ultimately maybe lost to the Lakers. And would have entered this season with the same amount of hype that the Nuggets did.
Right, yeah. And Donovan Mitchell played so well in the bubble.
Right.
And basically in that playoff series that it was going to be tough to write them off, especially since they didn't have Bojan Bogdanovic either. And he was like, I think, their second leading scorer last season. Mm-hmm. You figure they get him back. But yeah, I mean, they've been great this season. You know, like Donovan Mitchell didn't take the leap that I think some people have been expecting him to take. But he's just been very steady. Mike Conley, I think, is like a huge part of their success. Is he's playing much better. Like, he was a disaster for a huge part of last season, and now he's playing up to his you know, normal standard, kind of what we expected from him in Memphis. And yeah, Jazz, their last loss was January 6th, and they're ranked third in Basketball Reference and simple rating, and that's only below the Bucks and the Lakers.
Yeah, like I said, it's been a quiet ascent, right? I mean, there's been so much talk about the Lakers' dominance in the West. Obviously, the Clippers are always going to be a story. And then I think the COVID stuff kind of took over as the dominant narrative the last few weeks. And Utah has been one of the teams that's been unaffected by that so far. That's certainly been a bonus. I mean, the question, though, is, you know, we talked about them in the context of last season and how that ended. Like, what is it going to take for them to be considered as a serious contender? Because I think you do have the two juggernauts in the Lakers and the Clippers that no matter what, I think the Lakers could lose like 10 games in a row and they'd still be the favorite. You know, there's just such a talent gap there in terms of LeBron and Davis at the top that no other team necessarily can match. But I mean, what would it take for Utah to truly make you think about like, hey, is this maybe a, you know, a 60-40 series if they were to face the Lakers?
I think Mitchell probably does have to take that step forward into, like, he's playing really well. Like, I can't really, like, I'm not going to sit here and trash Donovan Mitchell for averaging, you know, 23-5-4 on pretty good efficiency. But I think he needs to be able to take a consistent step up. And, you know, I think, I mean, they're kind of piecemealing a third player out of like multiple different players, right? Like Conley's looked pretty good, but you still wouldn't really, I mean, maybe you want him as your number three, but Jordan Clarkson's been playing well. Bojan Bogdanović is, you know, he's not playing well, but he will eventually. I'm not sure what it'll take for people to take this team seriously because they're built about as well as I think a balanced team could be built, right? Just a team that's really good 1-5. And that's borne out in their starting lineup, and because their starting lineup is plus 20. Like their starting lineup just, you know, smokes everyone. So I don't know. I think you have to respect how balanced they are, but at the same time, usually it is the top end talent that comes through.
Do you think it would take some sort of acquisition? Like as currently constructed, are the Jazz good enough to say make the Western Conference Finals? You know, I think they are so reliant on that starting lineup. Like you said, you have Jordan Clarkson off the bench, but at the end of the day, that's Jordan Clarkson. And I don't think anyone's going to take that too seriously. And beyond him, you know, it's a little bleak. Like Joe Ingles is not really the player that he was 4 or 5 years ago. You know, their top 4 or 5 is really good, especially if this is the Mike Conley who leads the league in plus minus by a mile right now. If he's going to be that guy all year, I mean, that certainly changes things. But even Mike Conley, who's, you know, a borderline all-star for most of his prime, like I still don't know if that's quite enough. Like, obviously, if you're going to bring in somebody who's going to make a difference, you're going to be sending out a decent amount of talent as well. And unlike Denver, they don't have a Michael Porter type of piece that you could cash in for someone like Brad Beal. So they're in kind of a weird spot where I do feel like they still need one piece, but they probably can't get a truly elite piece. So maybe you have to settle for someone who's like a Bogdanović level player. But then the question is, what are you giving up? It would basically have to be future draft capital, right?
It would be, because they don't, like you mentioned, they don't have anybody that I think teams would be interested in. Even their young players are like close to no names, right? Like George Niang, Mie Oni, Juwan Morgan.
Right.
So no one's taking those guys. It would have to be draft capital. But I think, I don't know, you kind of look around in the Western Conference and it's hard to point to too many teams that like they're, you know, you wouldn't feel good about them in a playoff series against, right? Like maybe not the Lakers or the Clippers, but you start going down the line. It's like, we know Denver's defense is terrible. Portland is iffy. You know, we don't really know, you know, Nurkic and McCollum are out. Once they're back in, I think they would have a good series against Utah. Golden State, I feel like I would still, you know, Utah should win that. And then after that, you're talking about like maybe Phoenix, Dallas, but they're a more complete team than most of those other teams I just named.
100%. I feel like they are, you know, if one of those main pieces, you know, is not at 100% though, I think they're a little bit more vulnerable, especially when you look at the depth of a team like the Lakers, but certainly an encouraging start for sure. And I'm glad to see Mike Conley back as well, because that was extremely depressing for most of last season.
Yeah, he was not good at all. And I think some of it was, you know, he had played in one place for so long. I think it was just hard to get used to a new system, just a new home, everything like that. But he's been great for them this year. 17 points, 6 assists, 1.5 steals, shooting efficiently. He has been really good for them.
The RotoWire NBA podcast is brought to you by BetMGM. Sports bettors know that magic happens when you turn a hunch into action and apply the right amount of expertise. That is why BetMGM has teamed up with RotoWire to offer new BetMGM customers a free 6-month RotoWire subscription when you placed your first bet. Register on the BetMGM app or website and use promo code ROTO, that's ROTO, R-O-T-O, to claim your free subscription. Once you make your first sports wager, you'll receive a season's length of RotoWire's unmatched sports insights. Find out why BetMGM is the king of sportsbooks by signing up and placing your first bet today. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. Colorado, Indiana, New Jersey, Nevada, Tennessee, and West Virginia only. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700 in Colorado and Nevada, and 1-800-GAMBLER in New Jersey and West Virginia. In Tennessee,
call or text the red line at 800-889-9789. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana. Promotional offer not available in Nevada. So we usually try to do this, you know, once every week or every other week, kind of taking a look at the standings and, you know, determining as they stand right now, you know, how legitimate is this, you know, when you fast forward to May or June. I feel pretty good about the top four in the West right now, which speaks to just how fluid this stuff is, because I think we were talking about the Suns as like for sure the third best team in the West not that long ago. And we'll get to Phoenix in a little bit, but the Suns are now back. They're down to 500. They're 8-8. They're in ninth technically in the Western Conference. I don't think Utah finishes the season as the top team in the West. I think that will be the Lakers, maybe the Clippers. But the top four of Utah, LA, Denver, to me, that feels about right based on what we've seen so far.
I think so. I mean, Denver is so bad on defense. Like, I don't have a ton of faith in them to potentially win the finals or win, you know, get to the finals, but they have so much offensive talent. Like, we know about, you know, Jokic and Michael Porter Jr. and Jamal Murray's inconsistent, but he can get hot. I feel pretty good about them. You know, I think if Portland was healthy, they would have an opportunity to be in that four spot. And I think, you know, if Phoenix, I still think Phoenix has that potential, but yeah, you mentioned them, they're in free fall right now, like 3-7 over the past 10 games and -3 net rating over that span, 19th ranked offense and defense over the past 10. So I don't really know what's happening with them. I mean, they started off really hot. This might be just some like regression essentially. And Devin Booker hasn't played the last two games. He's going to miss tonight also, but I think Denver, Portland, and Phoenix are pretty close for me when they're at full strength.
I still think I would side with Phoenix based on the talent, you know, and I think they'll have their run. You know, maybe they peaked in the second week of the season, but I think eventually, you know, they'll probably be that team that sidles up to Denver or whoever's in fourth place. And that would be my top five right now: Utah, LA, Denver, Phoenix. You know, Portland is technically in fifth right now. They're only up one game on Phoenix. So, you know, by the weekend, this could all completely change. But with the injuries and Portland also just didn't even look that good, you know, before Nurkic went down. Obviously, McCollum was playing out of his mind, but they weren't getting a lot from Nurkic. They weren't getting a lot from Robert Covington. There wasn't a feel that team was a whole lot better, at least in my mind, than they have been the last few years, which has just been a very fun team, a team that has a really fun backcourt, but not a true, you know, contender or a team that the really elite franchises actually concern themselves with. And then you have Golden State, San Antonio, Memphis kind of in the middle. The only other team, like once you get below that top four, with the exception of Phoenix, the only other team that I still take seriously as a potential, I don't know if I'd go as far as title contender, but, you know, maybe a threat to make the West Finals would be Dallas.
Yeah, Dallas, I kind of have mixed feelings about. I mean, it's hard. Doncic is so good that you figure he can drag a team incredibly far. Like, we almost, like, what he was doing against the Clippers in the first round last season was incredible. And, like, better than stuff we've seen out of James Harden, like, in similar situations. And so he can carry a team pretty far, but I just don't know. First of all, Porzingis' availability is, like, always going to be a question because he can never stay healthy. And if they don't have Porzingis, they don't stand a chance, I don't think. And even if they're at full strength, I still don't think they're definitively better than Portland, who I know, like, they weren't playing that well, but I'm still, their talent level is still really high. So I like Dallas, but I'm not ready for, you know, to declare them better than a lot of these teams in, like, tier two.
So I'm with you on Porzingis. The health is always going to be a concern. I think we'll be talking about that, you know, 5-10 years from now. I think the same problems, and they'll probably only get worse as he gets older. My question with him is, do you think Dallas regrets maybe not making the trade because they didn't really give up all that much, but do you think Dallas regrets making that deal and then paying him, making him, you know, their second max player in the long term? Like, do you think they look back and say, we maybe could have done better for a guy to pair with Luka?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the fact that they basically gave up nothing for him is part of the equation. Right. And I think in theory, he's a great number two guy to have next to Luka because it's, you know, it's in the similar vein as a LeBron AD dynamic, right? You have a floor spacing big who can play some defense next to the ball handling, like savant essentially. But yeah, it's tough. Like, you don't want to let him go, and I'm sure he would have left and gotten similar money from somewhere else just as easily. And when you have someone as good as Doncic, like, obviously he's really young and you have a lot of time with him, but he's so good now that you feel like you're missing out by not just going for it. And when you have a guy in Porzingis, like, already there, like, in your house, essentially, it's hard to just be like, you know what? Nah, we'll try to find someone else.
No, for sure. I mean, it would be kind of a ruthless move to move on. I think they have to explore it at some point. I mean, it's nothing really against Porzingis. I think it's the health concerns more than anything. And then the fact that I think because of those health concerns, it feels like he hasn't really been able to improve at all. And I think physically he's not quite as much of like a freak as he was with the Knicks. I mean, he's had a meniscus issue. He's torn his ACL since then. So it's understandable, but I mean, it's not like he's 31 years old. You know, I think you'd like him to look a little better than he does right now. And I think the amount of time that he's missed, it's kind of like he has to reset before every season. You know, when you're missing 2 to 3 months with these injuries, you know, you can't use the offseason to improve in the same ways that other guys around the league are. And it just kind of puts you on this treadmill of being the same player year in and year out. And thankfully for him, I mean, that's still a very good, like, all-star level player. He's great. But, you know, if you're Dallas, like, would you rather look into like a Brad Beal type? Right. Who I don't know if he's the best fit with Doncic. I think having a floor spacing big man is ideal, and there's not that many great ones out there. But I don't know. I'm just saying I wouldn't be surprised in the next year or two if Dallas is seeking an upgrade next to Doncic, or at least finding a third guy which I think that's a lock. I think they've been trying to do that this whole time, because it's clear to me, and they've had a lot of guys miss time due to COVID, and that's part of it. But as currently constructed, I don't think this team is even a dark horse title contender like I thought they would be coming into the year.
No, and the part of the problem with trying to get a third guy is they don't really have any assets other than exactly. Porzingis. I was kind of thinking, what do you think of the chances if Karl-Anthony Towns becomes unhappy that the Mavericks could come to them with Porzingis and picks and for Towns? Do you think Minnesota would even consider that?
Well, in this scenario, it would basically be like James Harden, right?
Yeah.
Or Deshaun Watson, like, where it's like Minnesota might not have a choice, where I think they would start out by saying, no, we're not trading him. And then it would get gradually uglier and uglier over the next 7 to 8 weeks. And then, like always, regardless of the contract status, they would end up having to trade their guy. I think the question, like, if you're Dallas, I would do that deal in a heartbeat. You know, if it's Porzingis and X number of picks, whatever, that's fine with me. I just wonder if other teams would be able to beat that. You know, if Towns becomes available, you know, is that somebody that Dallas or Denver would dangle Michael Porter for? Like, I think there would be other less risky options than Porzingis for Minnesota to potentially go grab.
Yeah, that was my initial thought too. I was, you know, I think I'm blinded by how perfect of a match that would be between Towns and right. Doncic. But yeah, they could. I'm sure people would line up for Towns. I feel like, you know, we're kind of barreling towards a situation where, I mean, Anthony Davis was like maligned for a long time as like, well, he can't win any games. How good is he actually? He's kind of hurt all the time. You know, he wasn't like in the mainstream, you know, kind of like discussion as an elite NBA player or someone, like, you know, if you get what I'm saying. And now that he's with LeBron, everyone's like, well, yeah, AD's like a top five player. Like, he's clearly amazing, when that discussion wasn't there before. And I feel like the same thing could happen to Towns, where he's been on a losing team for so long. People think he's just a losing player. And then all of a sudden he gets traded to a team where he's effectively the second best player or a 1B. And people are like, oh, wait, Karl-Anthony Towns is like really, really good and is very much worthy of being like a top five to top 10 player at the NBA.
He's been personally victimized by the Timberwolves. I think obviously his defense has taken some flack, and rightfully so, but for me, he's exempt from the Timberwolves sins.
Yeah. I mean, he is so good. Like, he could go on any, like, if he was the, you know, if he was Portland center instead of, you know, Nurkic, even if he was I don't know, man. There's so many scenarios where you could put them on so many different teams and they would vault into contention very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Here's just a random thought while I'm looking at a list of teams. Like, I don't know when this would have to take place for this to be realistic, but if you're Minnesota and that this scenario that we're talking about comes to fruition, would you rather have Porzingis in picks or John Collins in a sign and trade with picks?
Wow, that's really tough, actually.
So, I mean, you don't even have to use the trade part of it. Like, who would you rather have for the next 5 years, John Collins or Porzingis, assuming they're the same cost?
Maybe Collins. I feel like the shine has worn off of Porzingis, where the more we see him, the more you kind of realize, like, he's mostly just a 3-point shooter. Like, he'll get buckets in other ways, right? Like, but he's a shooter. He doesn't post up. He doesn't have a jump hook. He's a relatively one-dimensional offensive player, and he can be great, right? Like, he's scoring an efficient 25 points, or at least he can. He's a good shot blocker, but the injuries are going to take their toll eventually, I think. And it would just be really hard to convince me that John Collins is, like, meaningfully worse than Kristaps Porzingis over the next 5 years.
I think with Porzingis, especially in the early Knicks days, there was this, like, oh, my God, he's 19. He's so raw. He's 7'3". He can handle. He can shoot. Like, I think there was this thought that it could be like a Giannis-like ascent, you know? And maybe it would have been if it wasn't for the injuries. But as he gets older into his mid-20s and with all the injuries starting to pile up, I think it's just kind of like, yeah, this is his ceiling probably right now. You know, maybe he can get a little bit better as he gets cagier and smarter and older. But I think the days of him being like a potential top five player in the NBA are probably gone.
I think so. I mean, there's always a chance he has that season. You know, there are a lot of players who can have that, who are kind of, you know, maligned by injuries, that can have that one season where it all comes together for them. Like, they have a full healthy off season and they're in their prime, they're 28 or 29, where, you know, he could probably put up MVP type numbers if he was the number one guy on a team. Like, if he averaged, you know, 29 and 10 with two blocks or something, like, that's within the realm of possibility. But I don't know if that's really that likely to happen. And I don't know if you're a team that you'd want to gamble on that. You know, I mean, John Collins has been awesome too. I think that's kind of flying under the radar, like, especially this season, because he's, you know, the Hawks and him aren't on good terms essentially. But over the past three seasons, he's 20 points a game on only 14 shots. Like, he's 56% from the field, 38% from three, 10 rebounds, two assists and a block. Like, those are all-star caliber numbers. And Porzingis is putting up all-star caliber numbers too. Like, they're both basically fringe all-stars who are under 25, I think. Or at least Collins is 23. I think Porzingis is 25.
Now that your season-long fantasy basketball leagues have started, this is a great time to check out our friends at Monkey Knife Fight, the fastest-growing site in daily fantasy. The NHL and NBA are in full swing, and the NFL playoffs are here. The time is now to take advantage of a 100% instant match up to $50 on your first deposit by using our promo code WIRE. That's WIRE, as in Roto Wire. Get it? That's a free $50 in your Monkey Knife Fight account if you sign up with that promo code. We have huge NBA slates pretty much every night with the way the schedule works out this season, so there's no better time to dive into DFS. Whether you're an experienced player, just a beginner, Monkey Knife Fight is the place to play. Visit monkeyknifefight.com and use our promo code WIRE, that's W-I-R-E, WIRE, today. Okay, it is now time in the podcast for me to cede the floor to you to just read off some super depressing stats about the Timberwolves and Kings.
Thank you. I'm wondering what it will take for the Kings to fire Luke Walton and for the Wolves to fire Ryan Saunders. So the Timberwolves are essentially as bad as the Bucks are good. And lineups with Towns and D'Angelo Russell are only plus 2.6. So that is not a great sign in terms of, like, hey, things are going to be perfect when we get Towns back. Or, you know, when this team has Towns, they're still, like, they should be good. Towns himself, though, has a plus 23 net rating. The team around him is such a complete joke that he plus 23 net rating is unheard of. Ricky Rubio, don't know what's going on there. He's playing 24 minutes a game, 34% field goal percentage. They traded basically James Johnson and I think Pokuševski technically for him. I think the Wolves would probably be better
deal.
Off with
bad deal.
It, I think it is actually a bad deal right now. I think they would be better with James Johnson and Pokuševski. As far as the Kings go, so Rashawn Holmes has a plus 16 net rating. Everyone else is plus 3.6 or below. The confusing thing is their most frequent lineups are actually good. The most frequent is plus 11, second most frequent plus 12, and just the situation is basically one of them flips Bagley for Halliburton. But lineups with Marvin Bagley at center in 236 possessions have a minus 43 net rating, which I've never, I don't know if I've ever seen that before in like a sample that big. It's just, you are going to lose games if you play him at center. There's just no other way around it.
Yeah, the Kings are at least fun bad to me, where I've multiple times on a random Wednesday night, you know, they're always playing the late game on League Pass. I'll happily fire that up and watch De'Aaron Fox and Tyrese Halliburton and Rashawn Holmes go at it. The Timberwolves are a completely different story. Like, they are just, it's I feel bad for all of the players involved. I think except D'Angelo Russell and Malik Beasley, who seem to be enjoying this. Like, they're right where they need to be in terms of getting numbers. I feel terrible for Ricky Rubio, who I think Timberwolves fans like blindly were like, oh my God, we're getting, you know, our fan favorite player back on draft night, not thinking about what the roster around him was going to look like. And he's just, like you said, I mean, you read the numbers, he's playing terribly. His role has been super inconsistent. To be replaced by Chris Paul on a much better and higher ceiling Phoenix team, also kind of a kick in the face. I feel bad for Rubio. I feel bad for Towns as well. I think they've already sunk low enough. I mean, they're 4-13. They're a good, like, you know, five games already out of the eight seed, which this far into the season is a ton. Towns could be back, I think, as early as Friday, right?
I think so.
I think he'll be back within the next week for sure. Between the injuries, like for a guy who missed like no games his first few years, like injuries are suddenly now a very real thing with him. On top of having COVID, I think they're in a hole that it's going to be tough to get out of. And I think at some point they're one of those teams that, you know, having owed their top three protected pick to Golden State. I mean, when you have a player like Towns, I don't know, you can only shut it down, I guess, to some degree, but I mean, at some point you have to go into asset protection mode.
I think so. It also doesn't help that they're getting like almost nothing from Anthony Edwards, the number one pick. Like 13 points a game on 36% shooting, 30% from three rebounds, an assist and a half. That's not helpful at all. And I know he has some decent highlights, but anyone in the NBA playing 25 minutes per game with shooting 35% is probably going to have some highlights, or they wouldn't be doing anything at all. I don't know what they do, man. I mean, I think you have to try to protect the asset that you have in the top three protected pick, because otherwise I just don't know what's going to come through to make this team a playoff contender as presently constructed.
Yeah, I mean, you touched on Edwards. He has not been good. I wrote a piece today for the site and for Yahoo on the top five NBA rookies so far for fantasy, which doesn't always correlate to, you know, real life production. So like Anthony Edwards is not even in the top 200. Like he's like the 10th or 11th best fantasy rookie if you ranked them all out. Cole Anthony kind of in the same boat. I think he's like 7th or 8th. And you know, I like Xavier Tillman for Memphis right now is the third best fantasy rookie in terms of per game production. So it's not a perfect science. Like nobody's saying that he's better than Cole Anthony long term. But this class, it's not looking great so far. Like I think as a draft class, it's just fine. I think in a lot of ways it's like what people expected, right? I mean, there's been a lot of uncertainty. You know, I don't think it's shocking that the 12th overall pick is the best fantasy player and possibly the best real life player so far. I mean, that's kind of what this draft was billed as you might get a number one pick caliber guy somewhere in the middle of the first round. But I'll read you the top five in just in terms of overall fantasy ranking. It's Halliburton, LaMelo Ball, Xavier Tillman, James Wiseman, and Denny Avdia, who has only played, I think, 11 games and hasn't played in like 2 weeks because of COVID. And then there's a huge drop to like Patrick Williams is the sixth best fantasy rookie, and he's the 189th best player. Jae'Sean Tate is ranked higher than Cole Anthony. Cole Anthony's eighth. Quickly is ninth. Then you have Isaac Okoro as the 10th best fantasy rookie. So in a lot of ways, it's kind of mirroring last year's class where you had Morant, as by far the best. And then Kendrick Nunn and Brandon Clark were also top 120 guys. Am I missing anybody else?
I don't think so. Cam Johnson was fine.
Yeah, he was fine. I mean, Zion, Tyler obviously, Hero. On a per game basis was fine. Hero, duh. But even he wasn't that great fantasy wise.
No,
like
he wasn't.
He was more of a playoff breakout.
I think.
Yeah, for sure. During the regular season, Nunn was much more valuable. But basically, right now it's been Halliburton and Ball, and then everybody else. I mean, I don't want to dig into that because we talked about it a lot on Tuesday. But beyond those two, it's been a pretty bleak rookie class, Edwards included, for fantasy.
Yeah, there's almost nothing. I mean, I think people were hoping for Obi Toppin, and he's coming back from injury, but he still isn't finding real minutes because there's only so many minutes available for him when Barrett and Randall are just occupying a lot of those the forward spot. And Thibodeau's trying to win games, and I don't know if Toppin's really helping you in that category. So he's not. I don't think he's going to be fantasy relevant really this season either. Yeah, you're right. It's a pretty bleak class. Like, I don't know. You got Devin Vassell is third in VORP.
All right. That's a good place to end this one. We'll keep it quick. I'd like to end on a high note. I think citing Devin Vassell's VORP is exactly what I was looking for. All right. You'll be back tomorrow, Friday, I should say, with Ken and Shannon. You and I will be back next week. Hopefully we'll have Ben on as well. But enjoy the weekend.